In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
I really look forward to a government one day that works to earn people's trust. That would be a far cry from what we have now, a government that works to deceive people so that one organization after the next gorges themselves on government cash. A government that hands organizations cash that will keep the free government cash flowing by deceiving people. Organizations that help create and reinforce the deception that spending on their issue is vital, and that all that free money will save the earth, and fear-mongering that if we don't spend money, the earth is doomed. Well, it's Christmas time, and I can assure you that the only thing that can save the earth was a baby boy born in a manger. This week, we're looking at what I hope is the beginning of the end of the most extensive and expensive propaganda operation of all time, the religion of climate change. A massive scam that has seen trillions of taxpayer dollars funneled to the far left, which is why Democrats believe so hard in climate change. They make a tremendous amount of money from people and companies paying climate indulgences and from governments through taxpayer tithes. Just to give you an idea of how stupid and what a complete waste of money this is, imagine me promising you an investment where if you give me $369, I will give you $150. Not your original $369 plus $150. Oh no, you get $150 in exchange for $369. Oh, plus I'll throw in $4.40 in savings. While we can expect that level of stupidity from AOC, who learned everything she knows about economics from a coloring book, what's worse is that there are millions of Americans who think that kind of thinking and spending is smart. In her office's write-up, Delivering a Green New Deal, How the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act Bring the Green New Deal to Life, it says the Inflation Reduction Act contains $369 billion in public spending for clean energy and climate justice. As of April 2023, since the enactment of the IRA, clean energy companies have already announced projects representing $150 billion and $4.4 billion in customer savings. So, taxpayers spend $369 billion to get $150 billion in the private sector, plus $4.4 billion in customer savings. Let's not forget that. Of course, if we learned anything from Obama's Solyndra, simply handing green companies billions does not mean they do anything with that money other than spend it on executives and donate to politicians. But wait, it gets worse, because that $369 billion isn't going just to green energy companies who might or might not buy windmills and solar panels from China. It's handing out favors, goodies, and cash to little boys and girls who believe in Green Santa and who have been good Democrat voters. It's millions and billions for teachers and researchers and scientists who promote global warming, reward labor unions and organizers, activists to promote climate justice in vulnerable communities. In other words, Democrat communities that have been harmed by Democrat policies. And if that scratching of the surface is not insane enough, they want the Green New Deal and its philosophy, in other words, full-blown Marxism, inserted into trade deals, democratic processes, guaranteed income, healthcare for all, business competitiveness, and border adjustments. And again, that is literally just scratching the surface. This kind of insanity of giving trillions of taxpayer dollars to the far left has to stop. And with this Trump administration, maybe, just maybe, this is truly the beginning of the end of the climate change scam. I'd like to welcome Craig Rucker back to the show. He's the president of the Committee for Constructive Tomorrow, or CFACT. Craig, it is great to talk to you.
Hey, Mark. Great being back on your program.
Yeah, you know, since the last time you were on, Trump suddenly got himself elected, and things have dramatically changed. We had been talking to you about theoretical potential outcomes. What if Trump gets elected? What kind of policies are you likely to see then? Same thing in reverse. If Kamala was to get elected, what would things look like with that scenario? But and we're going to talk about some of those things, but I would like to actually start with COP29. That's the 29th Conference of the Parties on Climate Change, an annual confab of true climate change believers. And this year it took place in Baku, Azerbaijan, from November 11th to November 22nd. after the election of Donald Trump, I can imagine the mood there was just a little bit different from some of these recent ones.
Oh, can I ever say that for sure? I actually took off the day after the election because the conference literally started the next week. But to get to Azerbaijan is not necessarily an easy task. It's a country that used to be part of the former Soviet Union near the Baku Sea. And the UN this year chose that location, kind of an obscure spot, to host its UN climate meeting literally days after the Trump election. And it really did put a damper on the spirits of many of the climate people who were banking on Kamala Harris winning, because, of course, this conference in particular was focused on finances. And they were looking to the United States to get a bunch of the finances for the new initiatives that they were trying to put out there. So it absolutely had an impact.
Is it true that some people broke down in tears on stage?
Yes, that is true. And some of them were pretty upset. Now, listeners probably don't know what a conference of the parties is. It actually dates back to when the U.S. got into the climate negotiations. It was actually way back under George H. Bush. And then we signed what was called a Convention on Climate Change then. It was non-binding initially. It later became binding. We actually were called into George Bush's office, and he canceled the meeting at the last minute because it was an election year, and he wanted to call himself an environmental president. Hmm. But when we were going to advise him not to sign this, but he said, "Hey, guys, it's non-binding, nothing to worry about." Well, of course, like many of the things that the left does, what starts as non-binding later became binding.
Yep.
As part of that convention, the UN, the signatory countries are to get together. Initially, it was every couple years, but then it wound up being an annual event to have a conference of the parties to see what progress they were making on lowering their greenhouse emissions. And the big thing they put up was the Kyoto Protocol of 1997. Of course, the U.S. did not ratify that. And then they put up the Paris Accord in 2015. And, of course, we bowed out under Trump in 2016 and did not get back in until, of course, our Biden came in. And then he got us back in. And now Trump's, of course, going to get us back out. But what the discussions have been mostly are two things. One is that countries have to get in their plans or proposals as to how they're going to meet the Paris agreements. They want to stop the planet from warming 1.5 degrees Celsius by the year 2100. So they have these nationally determined contributions, NDCs they're called, and they basically are like a paper saying, here's what we're going to do to our agricultural sector to limit our emissions. Here's what we're going to do to our auto sector. We're going to start a cap and trade program, whatever it is, but then gets approved by the UN authorities and they're considered consistent. And you know, the nations are trying to get at least 60% or 75% of their emissions reductions. And a lot of it's just a bunch of paper game, but that's what one of the things is that they got to get done. And they had round one, which was due by 2025. And by next year, they're supposed to have for 2035 what they're going to reduce their emissions by. Another big item at Baku was the finances. It was called the Finance Conference. They have something called a Green Climate Fund. That's $100 billion a year from the developed countries to the developing ones. That was also on the table. And a new fund they just created 2 years ago that's $20 billion a year. This is in addition to the other one for loss and damage. This is at any time a hurricane, typhoon, or anything hits the developing world countries can reach into their this fund and, you know, pay for the damage that was caused to them because, of course, tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, and all that never occurred prior to us driving our SUVs or having coal plants.
No, of course not.
But now they're all linked to climate change, and they can draw from this fund that's supposed to be provided by the developed countries and meet those disasters as they occur.
Well, you know, actually, let's take a break there. So everyone stay with us. We're going to continue our discussion with Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFACT. You can find out more about them and the great work they do by heading to CFACT, CFACT.org. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFACT. That's the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Their website is cfact.org, and we'll link that up on today's show page, which is 14-49, in case you missed that, on ispyradio.com. And so, Craig, we're talking about COP29. That's the 29th Conference of the Parties on Climate Change, and this is the annual confab where they get together and scheme about how they're going to build billions of dollars from taxpayers and claim to save the earth by spending more taxes. You know, I have to confess, in that first segment there, when I said, well, is it true that somebody broke down on stage in tears, I was kind of joking. So did somebody actually break down in tears on stage?
You know, I don't recall somebody actually breaking down into. I'll tell you, the big speeches were done on, like, I think day two, when they dragged in a bunch of heads of state to talk, and there were some that were very choked up, but others not. I know that Podesta spoke kind of for the United States, John Podesta, that is, and he kind of sounded really grim. Maybe got choked up a little bit. He said that obviously the election was unfortunate, but, you know, kind of assured the crowd that we've been through it before. We basically, you know, we'll hold our noses for the next 4 years and we'll be back at it because the fight against climate is something that needs to be continued. So he kind of almost apologized for the American voters having had a big setback.
Well, they also got about $2 trillion from the Biden administration. I think they can make that last 4 years. But overall, though, what was the mood like there? I can imagine it was rather somber. Do you think they're beginning to sense that maybe this whole climate change scam is coming to an end?
You know, it was remarkable. Yes. I mean, I think the somberness came mostly from the developed countries like the Canadas and the Australias and, you know, the Frances and place in Germany, you know, United States delegation, of course, we were represented by the Biden folks, so they were kind of glum. However, oddly, and this is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen, we at CFAC like to always poke the other side at these conferences. Some of our antics have included jumping out of the planes with parachutes right near them to, you know, kind of ridicule some of the stuff. And we've also, when Trump won the first time, we actually walked in with MAGA hats on and put up a big life-size pull-up of Donald Trump and shredded the Paris Accord. We wound up getting kicked out into the desert. And literally, this was in Morocco. It was a Moroccan desert, and had to find our way back. This time, we decided to do a little more low-key, because when you're in a country like Baku, they don't really mess around. It's mostly a Muslim nation.
Yes.
And they, you know, they
sense
don't,
of humor is just a wee bit different there.
Yeah, so we wore MAGA hats in. And oddly, the people who are the metal detectors, as you get into the conference, wanted to wear our MAGA hats. They were native Azerbaijanis. And a bunch of them were young girls. We got pictures of them on our CFAC website, and they were doing selfies. And they wanted to be pictured with us wearing the MAGA hats. News crews started following us around. A French news camera followed us around for the whole day, actually mic'd us up. Huh. I think they were doing a story on the day in the life of a climate skeptic or something. And the developing world countries, I had long conversations, and one of them was filmed on the French TV with a person who was a high-ranking delegate from Sierra Leone, another one from Togo, and they love Trump. Hmm. Oddly, the developing countries think he may actually get things done. I think they came to this conference looking for true development assistance, and that's kind of the attraction to them more than climate change. And that's kind of held out as a carrot to these people. And they are not, they don't have the antipathy toward fossil fuels or to nuclear or to hydro or things like that some of the, you know, NGOs and the radical green groups are there, and what some in the West have.
Yeah.
So I think they just came, and I think there was over 70 of the leaders of these developing countries that came to here, mostly asking for assistance for aid for development.
Hmm.
So I don't know as though they're necessarily tied to the climate thing, or if they just look at this as a chance to get money from the West to help, you know, help their peoples.
Well, you know, usually I will hear some headlines out of the COP28 and, you know, the other ones before that about the various schemes that they've come up with. But really the only headline that jumped out that I ever ended up seeing was that the president of Azerbaijan ended up kind of derailing things in some ways there, where he roasted the West for their double standards. That it was okay for them to have fossil fuels. In fact, Azerbaijan is itself a fossil fuel, oil producing company, country. I really hate that term fossil fuels. I hope in the next 4 years we can come up with a better one.
And I agree. Actually, the president of Azerbaijan took to the stage and called fossil fuels a gift of God, kind of lectured
absolutely
everybody that they were essential to their development. I think they get 60% of their economy is based on the development of oil and gas. Interestingly, when we rode, our hotel was probably a half hour from the conference center, which was kind of held in, I think it's an indoor soccer stadium or something of that sort. When we went to it, there were just miles of oil fields and, the old rigs that are kind of out there. And shamelessly, the government of Azerbaijan put welcome guests to COP29 right in the middle of the oil fields. So we found that
humorous.
That's
kind of funny.
They were welcoming, so we stopped our taxi. Actually, we had them go back and find a good spot, and we took some pictures of that because we just found that quite humorous, that kind of ironic. I think it was lost on many people, but Al Gore, of course, was upset by that. This is the third year in a row, by the way, that they've had it in a largely petro-economy.
Yes.
Was Egypt. It's like 90%+ of its energy from oil and gas and some from hydro. But in addition, we had that with Dubai last year. And now again in Azerbaijan. These are countries that are the poster child of oil and gas development. In fact, owe a lot of their riches to it. And this is where they're holding the climate conference?
Yeah. It is rather odd. And I can't make out whether they're trying to convince these oil companies they need to, or countries, I keep saying company, whether they need to convince these countries to move away from oil or if it's just some kind of poke in the eye. It's really rather odd that, as you say, 3 years in a row they've done that. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, we're going to start talking about some of the policies that need to go now that Trump is going to be heading into office. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Craig Rucker. Back talk today to Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFACT, or Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Their website is cfact.org, cfact.org. And Craig, we were talking during the break there that you had one more thought that you wanted to share with people before we leave the COP29.
Yeah, I think that one of the major things that is a real reason that people should be opposed to this, because a lot of people ask, what's it matter if we just talk to people about it? But there's real money at stake here. What they've advocated and actually put into place back in 2009 was something called a Green Climate Fund. That's where they want the developed nations of the world to ante up $100 billion annually to go toward climate mitigation, not adaptation, not for typhoons and things of that sort, but just to put in, and these things fund, just the various things that the UN wants to do that are training people and young kids in propaganda about climate change. It's just a bunch of nonsense. Well, the amounts of money that they want to now put that up to, $100 billion, first off, is crazy figure, but now they want to move it up to as high as $1.2 trillion a year from the developed countries. Now, they did not succeed in that, but they did end the Baku conference by asking for $300 billion a year.
Wow.
Now, the good news is the developed countries have not been anteing up. In fact, of the first $100 billion that they wanted, they only got about $12 billion or $13 billion in so far. But it's still something that what taxpayers ought to be concerned about. And this, and then in addition to that, they established a new fund for loss and damage. That's a separate fund for $20 billion a year. And of course, the U.S. taxpayers are expected to pay for all the climate disasters that occur routinely around the world and have been since the beginning of time. But they're trying to put us on the hook to pay for them and the cleanup of them and the devastation of them, no matter where they occur at any time. And I'm not trying to say the U.S. shouldn't help out, but they want to put us on the hook for a good chunk of that $20 billion per year, in addition to the $300 billion that they want for just climate action.
Well, if we just stopped helping people in North Carolina or stopped helping our vets, or maybe we need to start cutting back on Social Security, then we could afford maybe those things. At $300 billion, that's just obscene.
It is obscene. And, it's unfortunate, but that is where the route of this is. It's become all about money. If you go to the green, we usually divide these conferences into two zones. One's called the blue zone, where the delegates are. The other's the green zone, where a lot of the NGOs are. But they aren't, and the press often goes there too. But the green zone is now comprised of banks, solar energy companies, wind energy companies, all selling their wares. These have become business conferences for those in the renewable energy industry to try and sell their wares to the nations of the world to meet climate goals. And, you know, they really are just becoming, business meetings. And that's you know, nobody's really talking about the science that's driving this or anything of that sort. It's just assumed the planet is going to go extinct, kind of like AOC said back in 2018, by 2030, we're all going to die.
Yeah. Well, since you're bringing up the science, that kind of leads us into our next topic here, because in the past when we've talked to you, certainly recently, it's been kind of theoretical. What if Trump gets elected? Well, now that he has been elected, I am thinking that some of the things that he's going to be doing is start attacking that science and exposing what a fraud it is. He will need to do that in order to start pulling out some of that money, because people, you know, they've been indoctrinated. The propaganda has been relentless. It's, you know, multi-billions of dollars going into programming the next generation that climate change is real, and if only we spend more money, somehow we'll fix it. I really think that Trump is going to need to start attacking that science. And so as far as the policies are concerned, you know, policies are the overall plan or strategy. Regulations are the legal steps to achieve those policies. So if you and like-minded organizations are advising the president, who has said how much he loves cutting regulations, what are some of the worst policies and or regulations that need to be yanked out?
Well, we've actually already begun that process. We work with allies, CFAC does, including the Competitive Enterprise Institute in Washington, as well as the Heartland Institute out of Chicago, a bunch of other ones, National Legal Policy Center, and a bunch of other ones. But we've put together kind of a top list, and included among them, I think, is very important, is this whole endangerment finding, which just says that CO2 is a pollutant and needs to be regulated. I think that needs to be reexamined. That was put in during the Obama years, and it's really been the linchpin for everything that's been done that attacks agriculture and fertilizers, to mandating electric vehicles, to this whole push for renewable energy, all the things that we're, even right down to what foods we should be eating, no red meat and more vegetables. It's all based on the idea that CO2 is a pollutant. But the logic that they used in that particular thing really should be looked at again by more rational minds, because a lot of what they did to rely on it under the Obama administration is just, you know, it's either outdated and just flagrantly has shown itself not to be true. So I think that's a good starting point. And I think once that unwinds, a lot of other things, the justification for them would unwind.
Well, it's not only doesn't make any sense, it's also simply scientifically wrong. And everybody should have learned in elementary science that CO2 is a nutrient for plants. Plants need that in order to produce the oxygen that we need. But getting back to science, do you also think that Trump is going to start attacking the science itself, besides this whole CO2 endangerment finding? Do you see him start going after this notion that, you know, the Earth is constantly warming, it's the hottest year ever, that end of the, I guess you could call it the more inflammatory type of science?
You know, that's our hope. I mean, he put into play some key figures. I mean, Lee Zeldin, you know, from New York, he's going to be in charge of the EPA. You have Chris Wright is a guy who's already being attacked by the Greens. He used to run for Liberty Energy and has been very involved in the fracking industry. And he's also been an outspoken critic saying there is no climate crisis. So I would look for his agency in particular to be the one that might be more outspoken in trying to take on some of the alarmist science that surrounds climate change, or at least that's my hope. Burgum, the other guy we work with in Interior, he's a good man, although he has bought into a little bit of the hype. He's touted carbon sequestration and has a big pipeline going through that we've actually opposed. That said, we've had some conversations, or some of our allies have, and we've been assured that, you know, what he necessarily as a governor, he has a duty to, you know, try and push the president's agenda through. So hopefully he'll latch on to that. And he's also was a big proponent of wind power. So, you know, there's, in general, we're very pleased with the picks. And so long as they push through with the Trump agenda, I think there's a lot to be positive about.
Well, I'm certainly liking a lot of those picks there. Of course, it's always going to come down to how well they're able to actually push those policies through. We certainly saw it with a lot of Republicans, even before Trump got elected, that they wanted to do this or they wanted to do that as far as policies, but they never got past the talking about it stage. And then even after Trump got elected, he didn't have the right people in place to actually do what he wanted. And we've since found out that some of those appointees were saying yes to his face, but then actively sabotaging his agenda. Okay, I just looked at the clock and we are way past time, so let's take a break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFACT. Visit them at CFACT.org. Stay with us. We're talking today to Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFACT, that's the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. You can find out more about their website, find out more about them at their website at CFACT.org. That's CFACT.org. And we'll put that up on today's show page, which is 14-49 on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Craig, I'd like to touch back on that CO2 as a pollutant and that endangerment finding. Is that going to take legislation, or can that happen simply as an executive order, or is that going to have to go through the Supreme Court?
Well, if he does overturn it, it'll definitely go back to the courts, because you can rest assured the Greens or somebody will take that on.
Sure.
But no, it can be done administratively. What the court ruled back then, I forget what that was, Massachusetts versus something was the name of the suit, but it essentially gave the EPA the right to regulate CO2 as a pollutant, but it didn't require them to do it.
Hmm.
So they have the authority, but they also have the authority not to, so they can do it based on their own science. So from our perspective, it's something that should be able to be done administratively and not take an act of Congress. In contrast, it would be our opinion, if they want to include this as a major pollutant, since it's so disruptive to the U.S. economy, it should really be passed by Congress as well. But in any event, that would be a big one that would actually touch upon the science of climate change. And I think that's where the opportunity to address the science most prominently comes in. If you really want to stop what's going on with regard to climate policies, probably the second biggest thing that needs to be done is get a grip on the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. That is just putting out tons of money that's fueling all the renewable energy projects and much of the Green New Deal. I think it was only $200 or $300 billion that was supposed to be put on that, but it's now exploded to $1 trillion or $2 trillion that are is just fueling this entire thing. And
unless
he can get a grip on that, it's not going to, this will, an army travels on its belly. I used to be in the military. So long as it's being fed, it can keep moving. But if it stops being fed, then it stops moving. And that's what's feeding the whole climate alarm industry.
Hmm. Well, I actually spent some time going through, it's just this harebrained write-up about how the, it's from AOC's office, so you can guess what it's like. But she's touting, well, of course she isn't doing it, it's her staff doing it, that is touting all of the billions of dollars that they're spending. And I got looking some more into that, and it is going to be just the Green New Deal aspects of the Inflation Reduction Act is looking going to be at least $1.2 trillion based on some estimates from non-governmental sources. Goldman Sachs was one of them. But then you've also got another scheme that they had that's going to add another $1 trillion. And so if that money starts disappearing, if Trump is able to rein that in, what do you see as, like, say, for example, the future of net zero? Because what's the ripple effect? Once that federal dollar starts disappearing, are states going to have to then fall in line and say, I guess really we don't want to spend all of this money on this net zero program?
Yeah, I think that would be the case. I think that that is the only reason that you're seeing these offshore wind farms and everything else go into place is because they got, monies bolstering them, both by the state. Obviously, the ratepayers are on the hook for a lot, but also you got federal monies. And the fact the federal government's making a priority of this. Those little incentives by go away, this would never be an energy source that could compete tete-a-tete with fossil fuels, coal, gas, or hydro, or any of those things. So this is what's, would become uneconomical. And that's a good thing. That tells you that it's not something that has made prime time. and is worthy of investing in if it can't hold its own. So in our opinion, that's a good one. I also think Trump could take aim at the EV mandates. I think there's a bunch of other things that he could do along that lines. You know, he could also open up our government lands to more energy development,
yes,
and rare earth material development. Those are things that I think would be really good. And I also think, very importantly, there's this whole push to try and do a 30 by 30 or rewild America. I think that's devastating to our economy. It's not actually good for the wilderness, as we saw with catastrophic wildfires. It's government doesn't have the resources to really manage the amount of land that it currently occupies. It needs to either be turned back to the states, or even more ideally, returned into private hands so that it can be managed by the American people.
You mentioned that a lot of these policies are not good for the wilderness, and I think some of that comes down to is the environmental left simply wants to be paid for doing nothing. Their policy has become, well, we don't need to manage the forest, just let it sit there, and if it catches on fire, that's fine, and hopefully nature will put it out, but then at the last minute, they'll have to swoop in after millions of acres have been burned. It's the same thing for things like carbon credits. What it boils down to is they want to be paid for doing nothing on those forest lands, and we'll touch on that in the next segment here. As far as some of the other bad policies that need to go, one of the other ones that I think truly needs to be revisited is the Endangered Species Act. That is what essentially killed the timber industry here in Oregon. Do you see that being addressed in Trump's term here?
You know, I hope it is. We have some good people working on that. Also had a meeting on that today. It does need to be reformed. And, you know, I think for the left, they consider helping species, putting it on a list. And then if it goes extinct, that's fine. But they got it on a list. They really don't care about the species unless it stops some sort of development or anything. What an Endangered Species Act should do properly is recover a species. So if you're going to do it, I think the agencies that are charged with this need to work with private landowners, but not coerce them, and be less interested in just habitat preservation and more interested in how they can actually recover the species in a way that actually doesn't disrupt the economy and doesn't threaten private property rights. I think that can be done. It has been done. We've seen it with the buffalo. We've seen it with other species like the alligators down in Florida, which were almost driven to extinction. It may be unconventional things that could do this, such as privatizing them. Alligator farms are, frankly, what saved the alligator, and same with the ranches for the buffalo. So these are private initiatives that could be done to save a number of these species that should be encouraged, rather than just the government locking up vast stretches of wilderness, calling it off limits to any sort of development, and the species still goes extinct. And the Greens somehow feel that they've done something constructive when, if you look at the Endangered Species Act, it's really recovered very few species.
And yeah,
a lot of times they remove them from the list. It's because they went extinct.
Yeah. Well, we certainly saw that here in Oregon. What they could have done with the spotted owl was simply hunt the barred owls. And now here we are some 30 years later. And it turns out that's exactly what they're saying, is go ahead and start killing these barred owls, which are the ones that were destroying the spotted owl. It wasn't lack of habitat. It was an invasive species attacking the spotted owls. All right, everyone, stay with us. We'll have more with Craig Rucker after this. And welcome back. We're talking today to Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFACT, the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Their website is cfact.org. And Craig, we've been talking about these policies, and I did not have access to my Dropbox for some reason, but I managed to get it during the break there. And the earlier bill that I was struggling to remember the name of was the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. That was in 2021. But anyway, that bill itself had about $544 billion of climate change and Green New Deal-ish. But then in the big one, the Inflation Reduction Act, it really ought to be Inflation Induction Act, that was $661 billion. But even then, it's hard to say exactly how much all of these are going to cost, because we always know that these government projections are always under budgeted. They always end up costing more than what they had said they were going to. But then there's this other little issue here they called uncapped tax credits, where they have not placed a cap on the number of tax credits you can get for things like EVs or putting in windmills or putting in, whatever. I mean, that could easily double or triple all of these tax credits, depending on how long that program was to stay in place. But again, I really hope that Trump's going to start pulling that out. And we've even seen there was undercover video which just posted earlier this week from James O'Keefe, who used to do Project Veritas. He's got a guy from the EPA saying they've been handing out a minimum of $10 billion over the last couple of months. They're trying to get it out the door before Trump gets in office because they know that he's going to stop it.
Yes, that was a powerful video, and I give James O'Keefe credit for that, as he often does. He comes up with these things that are quite telling of where the inside deep state is operating. You know, you raise a point. I mean, Trump has committed to trying to stop a lot of this stuff. You take like offshore wind, he's promised he would stop it. But the only way you're going to stop it is if you start taking aim at some of the monies that are being doled out to, you know, Avangrid and, BP and various other European firms that are actually getting a lot of these monies. They're not even American firms. So from our perspective, trying to get a grip on that is going to be difficult. We are working on that in Washington. We have a number of people that are numbers crunchers type people that are looking into that. And hopefully we'll be able to help the administration and provide them some guidance as to where this is. But we're going to need to get people in the administration and in some of these agencies. And I know a lot of conservatives are a little bit reticent to get their hands dirty and go into government. But the time is now. We need to get some in there because people, we always say in Washington, people are policy. So getting the right people in, I think, will go a long way. And reassigning those who are troublemakers is another portion of it. So, you know, yes. Managing government's a little different than managing the private sector. Hopefully Trump learned some of this in his first administration, and he'll do a more thorough job the second time.
Yeah, I certainly think that he has learned a big lesson from that first time. And I imagine a large portion of what these new appointees are going to be doing is just simply reining in all of that spending. And I'm hoping that a lot of people are going to be leaving government on their own, some of those bad actors. We've talked about bad policies, and there's so many more that we could be talking about, but I'd like to get your thoughts on maybe some good policies that ought to be put in place, like, for example, stopping cheating, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think stopping cheating, I mean, I deal a lot with the, obviously, we focus on energy and environment issues. I think there needs to be something streamlined to get particularly nuclear power online much quicker. I think that that's a game changer in terms of everything, really.
Yes.
And the fact that this country is you know, kind of stated around 20% of its energy from nuclear power, despite decommissioning so many, is sad. So I think the time has come for that. I do want to see a lot of changes, particularly in the land management. I think that the federal government owns way too much of the Western lands out there. So trying to come up with a concerted way to either turn it back to the states or to put it in private hands would be something that we'd really like to see. Obviously, a lot of the productive stuff that he can do is just trying to get the free market economy working again in the energy sector and in the electricity sector and removing some of the stuff that we talked about, the net zero priorities, getting the Department of Defense away from making green tanks or ones that run on solar power.
Yeah, really.
Nonsense like that needs to be radically changed. So, I mean, these are a few of them. I think our grid needs to be strengthened. There needs to be a way in which we should have FERC and that responsible for providing quantifiable, reliable electricity coming from real energy sources so that Americans can power. You know, AI and some of these other things are going to be coming online, and they're going to require a ton of electricity. Our grid isn't really structured right now to do it. And we are having a disaster in the making because, of course, the Biden administrations and others, going back to Obama, wants to do this all with wind and solar, which can't even provide us our current electricity,
Exactly. Leave
alone meet the electricity needs that are soon to come online.
Yeah, with all the AI and everything.
Revolution.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, speaking of that, I was on Facebook in a group message for the city of Albany here in Oregon, and people were complaining about their utility bills going up. And it was actually surprising how many people in there really understood what was really going on. And they said, well, they're having to raise the utility bills because they keep getting sued for these forest fires that aren't their fault. But also, they've been pushing all of these green energy policies into things. Do you think Trump will push something through on the federal level that says, you know, maybe you ought to be providing the most power for the cheapest price? Does he have the ability to do that on a state level, or at least where the changes on the federal level will trickle down to the state level?
You know, I think that it's going to wind up being the states that have to do it, but I think the federal government could provide leadership on that and making people accountable for it. So, you know, again, it's kind of complicated when you get into the grid. There's been whole books written on this that describe it. But I can summarize it all by saying nobody's really in charge of the grid. You have these RTOs. You have these. It used to be in the old days, basically the utility was in charge of it.
Yes.
But those days are gone. They're buying and selling, you know, across state lines and everything else. And that does involve the federal government.
Yes. And unfortunately, it's more about the agenda than it is about the economics of things. All right, it is time for a break. We'll wrap things up with Craig Rucker after this. Well, back in our final segment now with Craig Rucker. He's the president of CFAC, that's Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Find out more about them at CFAC.org, and we'll link that up on today's show page 14-49 on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Craig, with the time that we have left, I think, you know, Trump can do so much at the federal level, and I think that's going to have a rollover effect down into the states, whether the states like it or not, especially if Trump starts pulling the funding on some of these projects that I think the states are depending on. But there was an interesting lawsuit actually in Texas against BlackRock, State Street Corporation, and Vanguard. That's the trinity of evil on the left when it comes to finances. These are asset managers. They're I think, the three largest in the world. And what the lawsuit is alleging is that they had substantial stock holdings in every significant publicly held coal producer in the United States. And the defendants shared information, communicated with the management of the coal companies they invested in, and voted with their shares to artificially reduce production and constrain the supply of coal, which really effectively allowed them to manipulate the price of coal. And just to give you an idea of that, they held a large stakes in Peabody Energy and Arch Resources. Together, those two companies produce over 30% of the nation's coal. And between 2019 and 2022, production rates dropped, but the company's profits soared. Peabody, their production declined by 35%. Their profits rose by 854%. Arch Resources, they dropped by 9.4% in production, but their profits went up by 469%. So that's rather interesting. Did they do that, you think, to make a profit or to artificially raise coal prices to maybe make wind and solar appear more competitive?
You know, it's a good question. It could be any of the above. But this is the danger that we have with this kind of crony capitalistic system here, where you have a few big actors, the State Streets, the Black Rocks, and Larry Finks, and all those people kind of calling a lot of the shots for what private businesses do. We saw that most dramatically. I was actually at one of the shareholder meetings where, together with a group called Engine One, State Street, Black Rock, CalPERS, the big public union and all that, took their shares in Exxon and actually removed three executives and put in three greenies to run that are anti-petroleum in charge of Exxon.
Yeah.
Now, Exxon's gotten smarter since then and actually has, you know, figured out how to handle that. But that tells you the raw power that these firms have. And they're very committed to DEI. They're very committed to ESG, environmental social governance. And they actually can turn a company into where it doesn't do anything tangible. It doesn't, it could even reduce production, because companies are scored and a lot of times they're economically benefited if they don't produce, but they meet these criterion and they can, you know, maybe get subsidies for wind and solar. So they're not really paid to necessarily provide a stable grid or a stable electricity output. It's a warped form of capitalism. It used to be you produce a product, you get compensated for it. Now you produce a non-product, but it does a social benefit, and you can actually make money on it.
It's a
sad state of affairs, and my hope is that Trump could rein this in. I applaud. I think that's the Texas Public Policy Foundation that's actually bringing that lawsuit, but I may be wrong, that you mentioned in Texas. And we ourselves are also very involved in that, going to shareholder meetings. We partner with our people to try to oppose the green initiatives and that. I think we're making some slow progress. My hope is with Trump driving on the stage. You know, they'll take warning and they won't be doing any of these antics as much.
Yeah, well, we can certainly hope so. We talked briefly about net zero perhaps going away. One of the biggest things that Oregon is doing right now is they're trying to sell carbon credits. And as I understand it, there are three different ways of selling carbon credits in forests. You could do it by planting new trees where there are no forests and haven't been any. You can do it by planting new trees where there used to be forests. And then thirdly, by promising not to harvest trees in an existing forest. And that last one, not harvesting trees in an existing forest, is what Oregon is doing with its state forests, including the Elliott. And now with the Habitat Conservation Plan, they've taken about 60% of Oregon's forests offline, and the goal being is to turn those into carbon credits. Well, it's going to be really interesting, because if Trump starts taking away some of this money, there may not be a market for carbon credits. So do you see carbon credits being a thing of the past here in the near future?
I think so. I do know when I was in Baku, going back to where we were before, that was how a lot of nations were actually trying to get their naturally determined contributions approved by the UN is through carbon credits. I don't think that's going to work in the United States because of Trump coming into power. We've also beaten back some of the initiatives that the left has done. One was called natural asset companies. They tried to get those put in through the Securities and Exchange Commission. Again, like you mentioned before, Mark, these are companies that don't do anything. They just leave land the way they are, but they can make a profit on them by selling carbon credits. So those were denied. SEC dropped it after we and other of our allies petitioned against it, as well as about 22 state attorney generals, and which I think had more weight than we did. But nevertheless, it was stopped. Mm. And I think, the fate of this is going to determine on the marketplace. There isn't going to be a market for it, because I don't think it's ever going to actually be a viable way that companies can meet their greenhouse goals under this administration.
Well, I certainly hope that what we're talking about now is the beginning of the end of the climate scam, because it really needs to go. We could literally save ourselves trillions of dollars that is much needed elsewhere. Craig, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Whether it's carbon credits or some other scheme, only in the twisted reality of a far-left mind can you come up with an idea to get paid massive amounts of money for doing massive amounts of nothing. You know, in the years ahead, once the carbon credit scheme falls apart, maybe, just maybe, Oregon will have to reopen some lumber mills. But that's going to depend on you not being silent. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.